Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don in Studio A, and Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, my co-host, is in Studio B. Mr. Edwards, how's it going this evening?
Don, it's going as well as it can. You know, this is Ron from the left and my associate Don from the right. You know, the way folks that kind of like it. Taking a look at a lot of things going on. We'll be with you for an hour on tonight's program. Taking a look at some of the issues of the day, if you will. Just quickly on the note, government shutdown is still going on. What are we now? Moving into day 9, if you will.
Yes, we're in the second week.
Doesn't seem to be any quote-unquote breakthrough. President doesn't seem to be budging. Opinion polls blaming both Republicans, the Democrats president, but a more significant number blaming the Republican Party for the pain that the American people are playing. By the way, Don, you are a veteran serving in the United States Army, if you will. But before we go to this Las Vegas situation, I mean, as a veteran, Donnie, what was your feeling when you found out that that your comrades in arms are being denied death benefits? There are now 17 American families of all racial persuasions, so this has nothing to do with race, creed, color. It just has to do with the khaki, if you will.
Yeah.
But your comrades are not able to receive their death benefits, and we have a number 17, in fact, African American, Latino, Caucasian, etc., in the refrigeration units at Dover Air Force Base in Dover, Delaware. There's no money to intern them, to bury them. I mean, what's your feeling, Don, as a patriot?
Well, you know, I'm a member of a couple veterans pages on Facebook, and there's an outrage, Mr. Edwards. And, you know, I lean to the right as far as politics go, and there seems to be a mounted attack on President Obama rather than looking at the whole picture. And I chimed in a couple times today and today. You know, we have to look at Democrats and Republicans, okay, in this issue, because this should have never happened. But it did, and it's unfortunate. But to answer your question, there's a lot of outrage, and it is pointed at America's first black president, kind of unfairly, and I say that, you know, even as a Republican, I say that basically because of some of the things, the harsh things that were said, the racist things that were said, and not looking at the whole picture. And I invite people, you know, just don't look at one side, look at the whole picture of this, because if we had more than a two-party system, things might be much different. And so that's my answer, Mr. Edwards.
Well, John, I think that's commendable, and from the left, I have to join you. I think it's outrageous. It is an offense to the history, the patriotism of America's fighting men and women, if you will. And I'm a little, you know, I'm not surprised that the race card comes into play, attempting to put the blame on President Barack Obama, because it's the Congress that has to pass the necessary legal actions / legislation, and they maintained that last week they sent some legislation over, enabling, if you will, that would have allegedly put some Defense Department personnel, military. But now everyone admits that everyone overlooked the fact that the whole thing of benefits, particularly death benefits, travel and et cetera, for the purpose of the internment of your loved ones and et cetera, was not even in the temporary legislation that was sent over. And so I'm just kind of wondering how people come down attacking President Barack Obama as having something to do with this. I just think that's unfair.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that, because like you say, I mean, it's outrageous, it's nuts, and you know, I don't even understand why this is happening, period. And, I mean, I watched a little bit of the news reports, and I know that veterans, Yellow Ribbon veterans, veterans that are receiving 9/11 benefits, that are in college right now, are nervous. because if the first of the month rolls around, that would be the 1st of November, and this thing has been taken care of, it's going to jeopardize, you know, those particular yellow ribbon and 9/11, post-9/11 veterans that use those benefits for college and technical school, to where they're not going to be able to cover their expenses.
Okay, and I think this is good information for the general listening public to have available to them to be made aware of, if you will. It's bad enough, you know, 800,000 federal workers, though Secretary Hagel, Defense Secretary Hagel, allegedly called back 450,000 Defense Department employees off of furlough, you know, whatever that specifically means. But people are really holding their breath. And then, Don, we're coming up on the 17th with the whole thing of the debt ceiling. The United States defaulting on her obligations to meet her responsibilities fiscally and otherwise. Never has happened in the 238 years of the Republic, if you will. I mean, I have to ask you, Don, I have to, you know, step over to the right there and ask you, is there that much animosity, rancorness, and hatred of President Barack Obama because of the color of his skin to just, you know, crash and burn here on the, as it pertains to the far right?
Well, Ms. Eric, it doesn't make any sense to me because I've looked at these posts. I looked at these people like comparing him to a monkey, a communist, his picture with Hitler with a Nazi mustache, and there's been some pretty rancored stuff online here. And yet,
by the way, on
no...
that particular point, for our listening audience, and certainly we'll give the number, a story broke yesterday on the Associated Press on Michelle Bachmann. Now, she's kind of been a friend of yours to some degree. You know, you've kind of spoken highly. You know, we on the left just don't see her in a favorable light. But
yeah,
she did something I thought was just absolutely outrageous. And she was quoted by a number of the networks and Associated Press as maintaining that as a member of the House Intelligence Committee, that she was present when there was discussions about the fact that President Barack Obama is a enemy agent, enemy provocateur, sympathizer of to the Islamic cause, and in fact aided and abetted the enemies of America. Now, I mean, you don't hold sway to that, do you?
No, I'm not even I'm not down with Michelle on that on this particular time because, you know, she's trying to stay on top. And I don't know what her next move is, but it's going to be a scary one. But, you know, at some point, Mr. Edwards, you know, I'm a Republican. I'm a new Republican, independent Republican. I have to admit when my party is foul. You know, in that case with Michelle Bachmann, she's foul. And she should admit that. And it's the Republicans that really worry me that continue to attack, you know, this black president. You know, needless to say, you know, there's some people bothered about his approach to black America and what he should do with black America or for black America. And some people say, well, we said it on this show that the way things are going, he's only going to be remembered as the first black president of the United States. And that
and
really
we said that just 2 weeks ago. We certainly
yes,
did.
So with that said, you know, it just makes me wonder because when you hear the right and some zealots in the Tea Party saying, we want to take back America, that doesn't mean take back America for America. It means take back America for this white upper crust infrastructure that, you know, had the brothers in slavery back in the day in the first place. Started Jim Crow and the evolution of Jim Crow, keeping African Americans and Native Americans, you know, down from school to the employment field. And so that's what kind of take back America these folks are talking about. And someone
right.
needs to catch a clue real quick.
Yes, sir. What's that number, Don? Lines are open.
Sure,
this
yes.
This is Ron and Don.
Yes, please. Give us a call. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Excuse me. The phone lines are wide open. Go ahead and ring us up.
Don, I want to touch on this, and this has received national attention over the last 5 days or so.
Yes.
There was an incident at the Minneapolis International Airport here, in which a 9-year-old had you know, it's now clearly out there, a 9-year-old African-American child was able to get through the entire safety net. And I, by the way, I maintain on the left that the real issue was the embarrassment to a billion-dollar industry, okay,
yes,
security,
yes.
All right? And, of course, he was able to board a Las Vegas, I think it was a Delta, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
A flight to Vegas. He, quote-unquote, was not detected as, quote-unquote, being a interloper, if you will, until the aircraft was in the air. The stewardess were doing their job. They checked the manifesto. They noticed that his name was not on the manifesto as a minor traveling without parental escort, if you will. Started to question him, began to realize that he had come aboard without a ticket, without a boarding pass, and without any parental supervision. And, of course, when the aircraft arrived in Las Vegas, Nevada, authorities immediately took the little fellow into custody, if you will, and certainly have been interrogating him and interviewing him over the last 5 days. Yesterday, here in our city, the Minneapolis Star Tribune broke a story about the fact that the 9-year-old, and even if we knew the name, we would not violate the code and indicate his name. He is a minor.
Yes.
But the Star Tribune, in this morning's edition of its paper here in the Twin Cities, reported some of the initial problems this young fellow had been having. Father asking for help, if you will. One of the other issues that has come up, I've talked to some of my aeronautic friends and associates in security and safety, if you will. There is concern about the mother being an employee of an airline at the airport here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. There have been at least four investigations of possible child abuse based on complaints, though I thought that the Star Tribune article was pretty fake. Anyways, this afternoon, the father was on a press conference, if you will. I just don't think it was really the right move in that regards. I think they would have done better to have issued a written press release. If V.J. Smith of the organization known as Mad Dads had wanted to represent and explain to the public the pain that the family is feeling, then that probably should have been done in writing, because the manner that the father was attired, I think, had a tendency to scare people more than it gave them an understanding of what the family was trying to convey, and that was is that they want and need help. Now, my sense is that the federal authorities are going to make a decision on. They can't prosecute the child. I mean, you know, you know, not openly, but certainly the family are quote unquote subject to a judicial action, if you will, including taking the child out of the home. I'm afraid that because of the article in this morning's paper, in which they indicated that after his arrival in detention in Las Vegas, there was a violent episode involving him. Apparently, he was hospitalized. And as you and I know, that is an opening to begin to medicate you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the young fella, just a couple of days before he disappeared, showed up at the airport, et cetera, he had drove off with a truck. Apparently, as a 9-year-old, he's proficient enough to know how to drive. He drove off with a truck. There was a low-speed kind of O.J. Simpson kind of chase. He ran into an Edina police car, Edina, a suburb here of the city of Minneapolis, causing about $6,000 worth of damage. But
wow.
The police didn't arrest him. They took him back home. The father said he was going to spank him. He said the police officer, he said that both in the article in this morning's paper and at the press conference this afternoon, the police officer told him that if he put his hands on his own child, they would be forced to arrest him, you know. And so he expressed his absolute concern. He appeared to break down, the father appeared to break down. But I just don't think that it came across in the manner that is needed if one is talking about the need for sympathy and understanding. I don't think it was handled right, and I repeat again what I said. I'm just not going to make a statement and then not have my recommended solution, and that is there should have been a written statement. If Mr. Smith, V.J. Smith, Mad Dads wanted to read that statement, answer some questions, because the family was talking about anonymity, if you will. They really should have utilized anonymity to the max degree, and that is they should not have been present at the press conference. That's really my take at this point. What will happen? The child was initially supposed to be arriving back here today at the press conference. They indicated that he will probably not be arriving until Friday. That should be a red flag, Don, I got to tell you.
Yes.
That should be a red flag to the family. So that's part of the issue that's happened here. I think people need to understand that what's really made it newsworthy in that context is that this young child, and words like clever were being used by the white media even during
mm-hmm.
the press conference and et cetera. You know, animals are clever. You know, people are smart and intelligent, if you know what I mean. You know, you and I have talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly this was a young man who had made his mind up he was going to do something. They're saying now that he actually had cased the airport the day before, if you will. However it happened, I mean, it's a, you know, embarrassment to the Federal Transportation, you know, security network. I mean, that's what I would imagine should be their concern. But as I said earlier at the top of this this analysis, is that, you know, this young 9-year-old African-American child was able to penetrate a billion-dollar security industry.
And that's the story right there, Mr. Edwards. That is the story. And I listened to some media this morning on the radio on the way in to work, and they bastardized this kid. I mean, just he's got a rap sheet longer than my arm. You know, he'll probably murder someone when he goes to prison. And, I mean, it was just – but no one talked about the TSA. And I think that – the TSA has millions of dollars in public relations people to spend this any way they want to focus back on that little 9-year-old boy. That little 9-year-old boy walked through a gate that no one's supposed to walk through, you know? And,
yeah, in fact, a couple of gates, actually, and video cameras captured him at the boarding desk, actually talking and smiling to personnel. And then making the right kind of move and moving ahead and going down the corridor and going to the door of the jet and getting on, if you will. And, you know, obviously there are some serious questions, but also we want to be responsible. There has to be accountability. And, you know, the family, particularly the father, is going to have to ask some questions on how it was that he wasn't paying more attention to his son's activities on the evening that the young man disappeared, who, you know, initially said he was going out to empty the trash. And this came at a time when he was on punishment because of and this is kind of disturbing, a 5-day suspension from, and I assume it was the Minneapolis Public School System, though they've at this point stayed away from that. There'll probably be something in tomorrow morning's paper. But if you're having the kind of problems, and just the day before he had been brought home by police after stealing a vehicle, crashing into a police car, and et cetera, I would think there would be just a tad more supervision, if
mm-hmm.
you will. The father said at the press conference this afternoon that he didn't realize that his son was no longer in the house or et cetera until the wife came home from work. I just don't think that that's satisfactory, really.
Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, poverty is a distraction, and I just need to add to that, not only did he circumvent the billion-dollar TSA, he circumvented the multi-billion-dollar Delta. Because, you know, Mr. Edwards, I fly with two children and a wife to Washington, D.C. and North Carolina on a regular basis yearly, at least 3 or 4 times a year.
Yes,
and,
you do.
And before we get on that plane, I mean, the baby was his first trip here about a month ago. And before we got on that plane, they wanted to see my 2-year-old's ticket. He had a ticket, paid full price, adult price. Then they wanted to see the ticket with my wife's name on it with the baby's name that said Carrie in Arms.
Okay.
And my ticket.
Okay.
And my ticket before we were even let on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so this guy, I mean, if this 9-year-old can get on a plane at the Minneapolis International Airport, any terrorist who wants to do anything could come here and do the same thing. Period.
Yeah, yeah. Phone lines open, Don. Give us
Hold on.
If anyone has any observations or any questions for us here in Minneapolis on this continued breaking story, if you will, and the press conference held here this afternoon involving the father who was in disguise, if you will. As I said before, I just also think that was not a good move for any number of reasons, you know. Hoodies and caps and things just don't come across well and your face covered up, you know what I mean? So, but decisions are made, people take actions, and you certainly hope that this family receives the help that it needs, but you hope that there is not an abuse of the family's relationship to their child, because I still maintain that county attorney Mike Freeman, and well, the U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, really hold all the cards right now. They can make a decision to take an action to place this youngster in some kind of custodial control, if you will, and that would mean to put him at a facility, if you will. Even move to revoke parental rights. I mean, you know, people need to think along those lines. But let us hope that community leadership and others certainly rally. But as my associate, Mr. Allen, pointed out, there are rather interesting and sometimes vicious forces already at play here in our own beloved Twin Cities who are already castigating this young 9-year-old African-American child as a new version of an Al-Qaeda terrorist. And I just think that is just not healthy for everyone around. But, yeah. All right,
exactly.
That phone number again. Lines are open. I'm not interested to hear what the thinking is of some of our citizens, if there's anything on. I know the baseball games and things are going on, but sometimes you need to really serve up what your real priorities are, because we got a story coming here in the next 20 minutes in which, because people weren't paying any attention, no African Americans are going to be working. But anyways, Don, throw that number out there again, partner.
Yeah, give us a call. Phone lines are open at 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904, and we're looking for that call. Mr. Edwards, I woke up this morning at 4:30, and there were still news reports about Congressman Keith Ellison on CBS being arrested this afternoon.
Keith Ellison, Democrat, 5th Congressional District here in the state of Minnesota, which is all of Minneapolis and some of our quote-unquote suburbs touching the city of Minneapolis. Yes, go right ahead. What were they saying?
Well, they were saying, you know, he was, you know, arrested for protesting, and so this afternoon I had written, you know, how can this congressman be protesting and arrested and not protesting about our voting rights being stripped from the minority communities of the United States? How come the congressman can't protest to draw attention to the achievement gap in Minnesota and the harm that it's doing to Black and Native American children? And why can't he protest on the streets of North Minneapolis about our babies being shot down in cold blood? And if you don't see a problem here, you're blind. And so we had a number of responses on our Blog Talk Radio page to this, including, this sounds like an outrage, but why can't I shake the voice telling me that this may be an easy political publicity stunt, not an authentic arrest? Racial emoliations of the arrest put to side, I would trust the dude no further than I can throw him. When's his next election? And so we were getting comments of that nature regarding Congressman Ellison. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we'd love to hear someone that disagrees with that. And
let me do this also, Mr. Allen, from the left here, and that is that I had a conversation last night with a couple people, and they were attempting to talk in terms of you know, what was happening and what things needed to be talked about and et cetera. And I was a little disappointed that people did not understand. And by the way, I'm getting some text messages here in studio that we may have some people trying to get through. They say that they're not getting through, but as soon as I finish this observation, I don't want anybody to think that we're doing that. But, you know, all these arrests, particularly when you arrest government people and particularly Congress members and et cetera, those are pre-arranged arrests, okay? Those arrests are negotiated. Capitol Police were told in advance what, particularly what Congress people would be there. They would be arrested, immediately processed. News account says that Congressman Ellison spent about 3 hours in lockup. I would kind of wonder about that. He posted a $50 bail and already has been informed that he will not be charged. So people don't understand that these are controlled, negotiated arrests. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And people need to understand that. It's not like if you went out there and tomorrow in front of the federal courthouse, you fooled around and got arrested. It wouldn't be nothing negotiated about it. Your behind would be going to jail.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Overnight at least. You saw the judge next morning.
Yeah. And so we need to understand that that's a certain comfort level. I saw my longtime friend and man I greatly admire, Charles Rangel. So he was one of the ones arrested, a couple of congresswomen, and et cetera. But believe me, that when the decision was made to join the 150 protesters that had already identified themselves as being those that would be arrested, all that had been negotiated, okay?
Oh, yeah. A
congressperson on something like that, obstruction, trespassing, and et cetera, is going to be held in jail any length of time, okay?
Yeah. Well, never. And Mr. Edwards, the from this studio here, I just used my cell phone and dialed 347-426-3904, and it went right through. So our number is 347-426-3904, and we have no one in the queue, and have not gotten a call on that number here as yet.
All right, all right. The lines are open.
Yes, they are.
You will. And let me check. I'm checking. Same thing here at this end, and the lines are open. If one can, you know, dial that phone, and we're talking right now about Congressman Keith Ellison, Democrat, 5th Congressional District, state of Minnesota, who was arrested yesterday in a controlled demonstration and controlled arrest in Washington, D.C. My colleague on the right, Mr. Allen, has come under some criticism for even suggesting some inconsistencies, but I mean, we have to concur that there are a lot of things locally that our good congressman could have been involved in, you know, going downtown and protesting to the Democratic mayor of this city about police misconduct, police abuse. We've had some a number of very high profile police misconduct, brutality cases here. I've not seen any, you know, speaking out by any of our congressional leaders, and the only really city leader that really spoke out was Don Samuels, who is the councilmember of 5th Ward, yeah, and who is running for mayor and seems to be one of the front runners, by the way, for mayor. So, you know, a lot of opportunity for people to speak out on a lot of different things. We've got a lot of problems in this city, and they seem to be multiplying. But moving on, if everyone is comfortable with the controlled situation in Washington yesterday. The other big item, and this is an item that we're talking about, money. jobs and employment, and you know, people talk in terms of that.
Yes.
And that is Don, the Viking Stadium. I mean, where are we at now? Documents are now emerging. There was a $700,000 with an additional $100,000 added by M.A. Mortensen, the construction firm, to the African-American community, and that's down like the sum total of what the African-American community can expect to be the beneficiary of it. Am I correct on that, or am I off base?
No, you are absolutely correct. I am actually, I have in front of me on the screen the agreement or contract for professional service agreement between the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, a public body, and Summit Academy, OIC, a Minnesota nonprofit corporation, who says, pursuant to 2012 Minnesota Laws, Chapter 299, the Act, they call it, to perform functions described in the Act. And I am looking at, whereas the Act also states the authority shall hold a job fair and recruit, advertise at the Minneapolis Urban League, SABASME, American Indian OIC, Youth Bill Organizations, and other such organizations to program to recruit, hire, and maintain minorities for the stadium facility.
Yeah.
Okay, and so I'm looking at this contract here, and where
now, by the way, this contract was signed on the evening of October the 3rd, 2013, a week ago last Thursday. This contract, by the way, for our listening audience, had been under negotiation since July, and the RFP for it, Don, I don't know if you're aware, but we also here in the studio have some documents from the Sports Facility Authority. Do you know a RFP was sent out for the proposal? And do you know that only one entity, Summit Academy, fitting the RFP description to the T, if you know what I mean, was the only one to bid? That is highly unusual.
That's really unusual.
Because here's what happened, and a lot of folks don't know it. We basically decided here on the Donnie and Ronnie program, if you will, to maintain a kind of a silence. We were told in an official letter from Dorsey Whitney 3 weeks ago that we could not have access to the entities that were to be the recipients of the $700,000 from the state of Minnesota, from the taxpayers of Minnesota, because it was a competitive bid, and until at such time as the bid was unsealed and awarded, that was confidential information. Only problem is state law says something a little bit different when you only have one bidder, okay?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
You know, and the RFP was put out in April. Summit Academy came in with a proposal in July. Negotiations began between our Ted Mondale and Alex Tittle, if you will, the director of equity planning. And apparently negotiations must have been pretty tough because they didn't actually sign the contract until the early evening of October the 3rd. And so I'm kind of wondering, you know, what kind of got in the way. Now, this also comes at a time when the word was being put out by our leadership that they also were going to be come entrepreneurs having access to a significant portion of the concessions, which obviously would bring in millions of dollars. That didn't happen, Mr. Allen. If I'm not mistaken, the Vikings negotiated that as a part of their package.
Yes.
And have total and absolute control of all concessions pertaining to Viking games and et cetera, and there really won't be anything else happening in that stadium because there won't be any professional soccer team or anything like that anytime soon.
Yeah.
And so.
And Mr. Edwards, I don't mean to interject. I just need to interject this. Here goes the timeline. I went back through my emails that I received, and I was matching them up with the timeline that these things were coming out. So, October 19th, 2013, they said they had an advertisement of the RFP.
Wait a minute now, what was that date again? You say September or October?
April 19th, they had an advertisement.
Oh, April, there you go.
April 19th, 2013, had an advertisement of the RFP. I don't have any emails that say that. May 3rd, 2013, pre-proposal meeting at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, May 3rd, 2013. May 6th was the closing date and time for written question. Okay. May 10th, 2013, proposal deadline at 3 p.m. May 13th, interview and negotiations with prospects. And May 17th, announcement of successful prospect. And so it says if you want any questions about the RFP process was supposed to be directed to a Stephen C. Mackey, Director of Facilities and Engineering at the Dome, 900 South Fifth Street. That'd be downtown there. And so I'm looking at this. Like I said, if anybody wants to see it, go to rblacknews.com and just click on the contract. It will pop right up. We did not edit or take anything out. But what's suspicious about this that we discussed in our meeting, again, those phone lines are open, 347-426-3904, 347-426-3904. What's suspicious, Mr. Edwards, is the proposal should be developed by providing using the following percentage by trade for potential training of 400, 500, and 600 total people. And, you know, Carpenter.
Read us some of those. You've got them over there in your studio.
Yes,
there,
yes.
Don. What are some of the percentages? We discussed them at the production meeting a couple days ago. I'm fascinated because also in this communique from Ted Mondale and Alex Tittle to the MSFA commissioners, they talk in terms of expectations and obligations, if you will, and, of course, the fiduciary agent and et cetera, of course, is Summit Academy.
Yes.
Which means that Summit Academy was able to convince all the other 16 or 17 organizations to, you know, dismiss their right of sovereignty, if you will, in this particular matter. And I just wonder how the Urban League is going to shake out with something like this in its relationship with its national organization, the National Urban League of America. My experience with the Urban League as a longtime chairman of the board and et cetera is that the National Urban League is certainly not happy when a local affiliate abdicates all of its responsibilities and allows itself to be subject to the control of another entity in the dissemination or distribution of monies. In this case, $700,000 in state money and a $100,000 gift from M.A. Mortensen. I'm not understanding. And if you just could, just run the percentages down, because the document also says that the 32% minority and 6% women workforce goals established by the state will be also worked on. I don't know what that means. What does that mean,
well,
worked on?
And Mr. Edwards, I read every page of this 52-page document, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I found the one paragraph. But first, I have to say this again to set this up, because I didn't even tell you this earlier because I just wanted to see your response, you know, from me saying this. But again, I'm going to read this. It says the proposal should be developed by providing and using the following percentages by trade for potential training of 400, 500, and 600 total people. Now, we've heard that every quarter since 2008 in the black community. Now, trade carpenters, 17%, cement masons, 1%, bricklayers, 5%, iron workers, 29%, and electricians, 14%, elevator constructors, which are none in the black community, 4%. Sheet metal workers, 5%. Plumbers, pipe fitters, 13%. Laborers, 6%. Laborers and sheet metal workers are one of the lowest percentage with bricklayers. Here's what kills the black community ever getting anyone out of this particular contract working on a stadium. It's in section, it's Exhibit A, Approach and Plan, Section C, Part 1. The employment assistance firm is not expected or required to provide training currently provided by the trade unions only to identify and prepare individuals so that they qualify for acceptance in the trade unions. Mr. Edwards, the trade unions are full. They got people on the bench, okay, in the trade
Absolutely.
Unions.
Absolutely.
There's no way
Absolutely.
That any of these guys, and nor have these guys in the, since 2008, maybe one or two have slipped through and gotten jobs at maybe Mortensen or one of the other foreign talent.
Yep.
They can't tell me that they can train to have qualified people for getting the union to work on this glass dome in under 2 years or before the new Viking Stadium is finished.
The completion date, Don, is July 2016. So
yeah,
you're talking
exactly
in terms of basically 3 years. And construction, by the way, just for our listening audience and et cetera, it looks like we can't bait anybody to come up and ask any questions. Our construction cannot start, by the way, until after the demolition, which will probably not be completed, and given winter conditions, hardness of ground, all those kinds of things, probably the middle of March, if you will be the closest that you will get to beginning to put some of those 7,000 workers. And we've repeated this time and again over these programs that the work plan, time schedule, construction schedule indicates that there will always be a minimum of 1,500 workers on site each and every day from, let's say, April of 2014 until alleged completion July 2016. And I'm trying to figure out where the 400, 500, and 600 to be trained, because also in the communique from Mr. Mondale and Mr. Tittle to the commissioners, one of the things under our articles 6 and 7 and 8, and I'm puzzled, and maybe someone can give us a call and, you know, clarify it for us, talking in terms of untrained workers, but the untrained workers will be available to all subcontractors, and of course the untrained workers will certainly be identified in the numerical figures of the 32% minority and 6% women workforce goals. But it also says that Summit Academy will be compensated for the training. Now, you know, Summit, my good friends at Summit have been training for the last 12, 13 years. What happened to all those people that they trained over the last 13 to 14 years?
Exactly. Exactly. Where are those people at? No one knows.
Now, I do hear this, and I just need, you know, my friends to know this out there and these groups, the leadership conference and the consortium group and et cetera, I'm hearing now that negotiations and discussions are going on to bring workers of color here from other jurisdictions outside the state of Minnesota.
I wouldn't surprise me. And Mr. Edwards, we wouldn't be doing our due diligence unless we gave our listeners the list of groups here, because there's
let's read it over the air so that people know. These are the organizations that will be the recipients of the $700,000 in state taxpayers' money and the $100,000 gift from M.A. Mortensen. Go right ahead, Don. Read them. We got 15 minutes.
Yeah, we have Outreach and Identification, Azul Staffing, Somali Education and Social Advocacy Center, SEAC, Stairstep Foundation, Little Earth, Community Standards Initiative. That's actually Mr. Alfred Flowers and Reverend Clarence Hightower. District Councils Collaborative, never heard of them. Veterans Small Business Foundation, Neighborhood Organizing for Change, NOC, Latino Economic Development Council. Okay, Training and Construction Trades, Minneapolis Community and Technical College, St. Paul College, Minneapolis Urban League, St. Paul YWCA, Summit Academy OIC, Better Futures, and Merrick. And so, you know, whereas you were saying earlier, Mr. Edwards, Minneapolis Urban League was actually in the legislation, and they're now on a list for a handout.
That's absolutely correct. And Mr. Allen read that specific portion. And while I read that information over a year ago, 16 months ago, as it pertains to the legislation. And I think that that is critical and crucial to the relationship of the Urban League with its own national body. And that is that they were actually identified. Senator Jeff Hayden, one of our two African-American state senators, a man who has stood strong and tall, if you will, specifically made sure that Scott Gray and the Urban League was identified by name. Summit Academy is not identified by name in the legislation. Native American or Indian OIC. See, that's the trick that they pulled. And some of the legislators should really be upset with this, Mr. Allen. And this is kind of an exclusive that we're giving you tonight on this program. The academy that was in the legislation is Indian OIC.
Yes.
And what they basically did is went around Indian OIC, brought Ziegler from Little Earth in, and substituted Little Earth for Indian OIC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as well as the quote-unquote, and we just made reference to it because the Pacific contract talks in terms of an employment assistance firm, okay? I'm just not understanding how some of these organizations abdicated their fiduciary responsibility and et cetera to a entity that was not identified in the legislation. Not talking about the contract. We understand how that game was played, just as they were going to play it on, quote-unquote, the so-called concession booths or concession facilities that they allegedly were going to be allowed to manage, which is the same hype that they did on Target Field. And I remind people of the game that was played on African Americans who were hired for six games at the Twin Stadium from the Salvation Army.
Hmm.
And then 10 games into the season, these African Americans were all quote-unquote terminated with no Salvation Army concession stand or anything else ever seen again. But I want to reemphasize for those that are architects of the legislation, Congress, I mean, state representatives and et cetera, Indian OIC was specifically identified, as was the Minneapolis Urban League, to have a specific role, and they just got shut all the way out.
Yep, they sure did. It's right here in black and white. It says, whereas the act also states that the authority should hold a job fair, recruit and advertise the Minneapolis Urban League, Sabathia, American Indian OIC, youth-filled organizations, and other such organizations. I mean, their name, Urban League, is right there, Minneapolis Urban League. And Sabathia.
And Indian OIC.
And so we have, Sabathia is nowhere listed on anything in this, contract. And, you know, we have, we're going to have to get contact Lisa Jones and have her get on her game over there as interim director of Sabathia Community Center and see what's going on.
I doubt after her relationship and experience with the tornado relief efforts of 2011, I imagine she just did not have the interest to raise any questions. Though the question should have been raised, in that Senator Hayden went to great lengths to make sure that his senatorial and legislative colleagues made sure that a couple of organizations were specifically identified in the legislation. And when it was said and done, it's right here in the memo, you know, of October 3rd, 2013, from Ted Mondale, executive director, and Alex Tittle, equity director, in which they lay out the selection of Summit OIC Academy as the sole fiduciary agent and et cetera. I mean, it's right here, right there. But anyways, we had indicated that we would try to get Commissioner Lindsay to kind of indicate to us what the plan is now for the 32%. Minorities in the workforce, African Americans, and et cetera, because we've been asking now for a year since the legislation came out, what would be the actual breakdown of Americans who will be employed? No one can seem to answer that question.
No, not at all.
Or won't answer that question.
And I am actually looking for, there's a piece here about the outreach program.
You're talking about in the legislation or in the
no, in
material
the,
published by the Sports Facility Authority?
Yeah, it's in the material requirement for professional service agreement between Minnesota Sports Facility Authority and Summit Academy, OIT. Creation and operation of administration of an outreach and placement activity directed only toward the anticipated need for additional, only toward the anticipated need for additional minority women and veteran workforce participation under the authority's equity plan works for a force program. So, excuse me, that's on there, and I'm just trying to look down here because I just saw, I remember reading that last night, this was fishy. And as a request for services will also be identified, the completion date with time requested individuals. I mean, our listeners should just go to ourblacknews.com and click on the link and read this, and you will get pretty upset because basically what happens here is this is a billion-dollar project, if not more, and we had a few community self-appointed leaders go in and sell out jobs for the community for $700,000.
Well, let me tell you another piece, and I was asked by law enforcement friends and associates to make sure that at least this was put out on the air so that it was known. For years, the largest percentage, per se, of African Americans as it pertains to, you know, working like for the Vikings, if you will, on the stadium, working within the stadium and et cetera, has been law enforcement. And 100% Minneapolis police officers, okay, and 100% of the black officers, of course, Minneapolis police officers. A week and a half ago at roll call, the black police officers, some who have been working security at the Metrodome for over 20 years, were told that they will have to reapply for their jobs when the Viking operation moves to the University of Minnesota's TCF stadiums for the 2014-2015 season. And what black officers were specifically told was that they needed to know in advance that first call, first absolute priority for the jobs that they previously held would be awarded to the all-white University of Minnesota Police Department.
Wow, that is crazy.
Yeah,
wow.
And that is official. The document in question is in hand, and they were informed just about a week and a half ago that these black officers, now, you know, they play interesting roles, which is not going to make the NFL very happy, and that was that... once the Vikings signed the little $3 million agreement to use TCF Stadium, the university very quietly said, well, you know, one of the provisions that we have is that, you know, we have to, as a land-grant college, we have to determine security personnel. And the Vikings weren't, I guess, paying any attention, if you will, and certainly Alex Tittle didn't understand the relevance of what was happening. And so they agreed that, you know, the university would handle University of Minnesota would handle the security piece, and as soon as that was consummated, the University of Minnesota told Minneapolis black police officers that they would have to be reapplied, and there was very little chance that they would be hired,
which
is really going to take down the percentage of those who actually work for the Minnesota Vikings in the area of equity, diversity, and et cetera. Just a little piece for folks to know about, because these are the kinds of things that are suppressed by the Minneapolis Star Tribune and our leaders and et cetera. So just thought we'd pass that on. We were asked to pass that on by security personnel, security forces here in the Twin Cities who are African American. As I said, some of these officers have served as security for coaches, assistant coaches, the team owners, NFL officials, referees, and et cetera, and in some cases for 20 years. And I got to tell you, this is a very, very regimented and demanding program that the NFL, the NBA, and others have, organized Major League Baseball and et cetera. I mean, they take seriously the security for their personnel, right?
Yes. Yes.
African-American police officers in this city, city of Minneapolis, were told that they are no longer qualified to serve in that capacity.
Mm.
And not a single leader who has been going back and forth before the Sports Facility Authority, as we move in down to the last 4.5 minutes, ever thought enough about black law enforcement officers to make sure that they were a part of the equation.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. And it's going to be very interesting because I got to tell you, a pro crowd is a whole lot different than a college crowd. You'd really be surprised. And, in fact, you haven't seen anything until you see one of those Chicago games when the boys come up from Chicago. And, in fact, a lot of the folks, this is interesting, something that's not supposed to be talked about, but we're talking about it. A lot of the folks that are arrested for fighting and vandalism and battery when that one time a year when the Bears come to town were Chicago police officers.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Chicago police officers. In fact, last year it got so bad that a couple, and boy, they really were ticked because they're much more rigid. A couple of Winnipeg police officers had to be arrested and taken into custody.
Well, you know, Mr. Everett, at least the Chicago and Winnipeg police officers didn't call their chief a dyke. You know, I mean, it didn't make national news, so. Yeah.
Well, like I'm just saying, when they got through with the arrest the last couple of years, the majority of the Chicago fans who were arrested are Chicago police officers. So, but anyway, we're down to the last couple of minutes. Don, anything else on your end?
No, that's all I have. You know, it's just, like again, if you want a copy, look through this contract for yourself. Go to ourblacknews.com or blogtalkradio.com/ The Ron and Don Show, and you can click on the link and download the PDF, and you will have a lot of questions and concerns, and rightfully so. And that's all I have. Go ahead.
Well, we got about 3 minutes, so I feel compelled to do this two things. Number one, we pray for the members of our armed forces who are being denied benefits in the ultimate and final action of their lives in defense of their nation and defense of democracy. I join with my colleague from the right, Mr. Allen, a veteran of the American Armed Forces, in saying it's just outrageous that people are put through this kind of pain and suffering, if you will. It is inexcusable. I have to join with you and your good friend, Senator McCain of Arizona. I think that his statements on the floor of the Senate were profound. They were objective, if you will, and on point. Secondly, in closing, my prayers go out to the family of the 9-year-old. That family has cried out for help. I hope that leadership in our city, and particularly the enforcement entities, the county attorney, U.S. attorney, and others, show some sense of compassion in regards to what has happened and the appeal by this African-American family for help and assistance, and quote-unquote, do the right thing, if you know what I'm saying, Don,
yes,
in reaching a hand out to this African-American family and to this 9-year-old child. I just will not accept the fact that this child is a bad seed and is beyond rehabilitation and corrective action, if you will. That's just not, if you understand what I'm saying, Mr. Allen, on the right, that's just not the American way.
Yes, not at all. I agree. Well, we'd like to thank everybody for listening. We're right under 1 minute here. We'll be back next Wednesday, same time, same station. Thanks a lot, and thank you, Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, sir.
Down at the feet show, watching all the creeps, so she can tell a story to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a pitch, she couldn't make it on her own. So